We know there are times where you're just too busy to sort through the mass of information that comes your way. So to make it easier for you to stay informed, subscribe to The Morning Agenda, WITF's news podcast, where the only agenda is you.
Funding for The Spark is provided by Capital Blue Cross, focused on creating a healthier future for our communities through innovations like its Capital Blue Cross Connect Health and Wellness Centers, which provide in-person services and inspire healthy living. Learn more at capitalbluecross.com. The Spark is also supported by UPMC. Choose UPMC for your family's health care needs close to home. Visit upmc.com/centralPA for a complete list of services and locations.
Animal abuse is widely recognized as both a risk factor for and a potential consequence of interpersonal violence. In children, especially, factors such as dysfunctional families, antisocial personality, physical, psychological, or intimate abuse, and frequent exposure to domestic aggression or animal abuse have been confirmed as factors that can predispose young people to perform acts of animal cruelty. That's according to the National Institutes of Health. The FBI has recognized the connection between animal cruelty and violence toward humans since the 1970s. When its analysis of the lives of serial killers suggested that most had killed or tortured animals as children. Obviously, not everyone who hurts animals becomes a serial killer, but there is a correlation between violence and animal cruelty. At the same time, animals are playing roles in the nation's courtrooms today and elsewhere to support victims of violence. So we're going to talk about all these things today with Kristen Tullo, Humane Society of the United States Pennsylvania State Director, Teresa Olson, the Program Director with Suspected Child Abuse and Neglect Pennsylvania Chapter at the American Academy of Pediatrics, and Dana Herman Hart, Director of Legal Services and Pause for Empowerment Program for Crisis Center North. I want to welcome all three of you to the program today.
Thank you so much for having us.
So, Kristen, let me start with you. The Humane Society has been instrumental in making the world aware of the link, I understand that it is called or referred to, the link between animal cruelty and violence. What have you found?
Yeah, and our coalition today, the Keystone Link Coalition, does just that. We aim to connect the dots between animal abuse and interpersonal violence, and our coalitions really come together dedicated to the prevention of protecting both humans and animals as victims of abuse. And I thought it was really interesting that you brought up how the FBI has been, you know, looking into this since 1970s. And even before that, a lot of people, some people may be aware that Mary Ellen Wilson was the victim of the first widely recognized child abuse case. And she was abused and neglected, but she couldn't get help at that time because there were no laws that existed for the protection of children. So ironically, they actually turned to the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. Henry Berg, their founder of the society, argued that Mary Ellen was a member of the animal kingdom and she needed protection from the state. So within 48 hours, a successful investigation was launched. And shortly after, Berg went on to become a founder of the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children. And the reason this story is so compelling is that it does illustrate exactly what you just mentioned, that even since the 1800s, people recognize that these issues are highly correlated.
When was that?
1800s. Yeah, early 1800s.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it doesn't stop. A lot of people, it's described as animal cruelty, but a lot of people don't see it as violence. It is violence, though.
It is. And even so much so that in 2016, the FBI actually began tracking animal abuse crimes into different categories. Prior to that, they were all lumped together, but now they're broken into four areas. The first is animal neglect. The second is intentional abuse and torture. The third is animal sexual assault. And the fourth is organized abuse like rooster and dog fighting.
All right, I'm afraid to ask about animal sexual abuse.
Yeah. That's a
don't get too graphic.
Yeah. We won't. That's always a topic that's difficult, but it is the most highly linked predictor of going on to child sexual abuse, and that's why it's so important that we intervene to get these preventative strategies in place to help protect people and pets.
I would guarantee that not very many people know that it is the most highly predictable.
It is.
That is incredible.
And, as our states are actually starting to become implemented with what's called the National Incident-Based Reporting System, and it's going to allow us to have even better tools to help protect victims from abuse.
So we're going to talk about the way that is done in just a moment. Mm-hmm. Teresa Olson, you're the program director with Suspected Child Abuse and Neglect with the Pennsylvania Chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. First of all, pediatrics in the title. Is this just a young person thing, or does it make the range of ages?
Qualified that just a little bit. I mean, the American Academy of Pediatrics and my child abuse education program is designed to create recognition for medical providers so that they can recognize suspected child abuse and neglect. And part of that, of course, includes kind of the risk factors for what they should be looking out for if a child may be a victim of abuse or neglect. And certainly when we talk about animal abuse, that is a big red flag. And this program is been given to primary care providers, as well as school nurses and emergency medical services providers. And whenever we bring up the topic of animal abuse, it's like, oh, yes, I've seen that. That makes sense that there is that link.
So when you say red flag, you describe it as a red flag, a risk factor. In what ways?
Well, what we know through the link research is that there is a correlation. If there's an 88% chance that if there is child physical abuse, that there is animal abuse in the home at the same time. So being aware of what is going on with both people and animals in the home and that connection for abuse. And so a lot of times we're aware that a child might be more willing to disclose abuse of an animal in the home and, you know, their beloved pet before they would disclose that, yeah, that's happening to me as well.
I mean, that statistic, that blows my mind. 88% of child abuses, there also is animal abuse. So let's turn that backwards. I mean, if there's animal abuse in the home, does that mean there most likely is child abuse?
If it hasn't happened yet, it is a precursor. It's a warning sign that there is abuse in the home. And sometimes it's just the pecking order. If dad is picking on mom, mom might pick on the child picks on the animal. So that's where there's concern for two-legged and four-legged in the home.
So what's the psychology behind this? And I don't know whether you can answer this question or not, but what's the psychology behind this that there's violence that is not only perpetrated toward children, possibly domestic violence between partners, but also animal abuse. It would seem to come from almost the same section of the brain that this is how a person reacts or acts or behaves, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, the threat can be a big factor there. There might be sexual abuse going on and they want that secrecy. So they'll be like, okay, well, if you say anything, that means I'm going to hurt your beloved pet or kill your beloved pet. So it can be used in a variety of ways. But again, as I mentioned, that kind of like pecking order of who's the weakest in the family, and that person is going to get that abuse.
All right, let's talk about something a little more positive and bring Dana Herman Hart in. Dana Herman Hart is the Director of Legal Services in PAWS for Empowerment Program, PAWS, PAWS, for Crisis Center North. All right, so tell me a little bit about PAWS for Empowerment.
Yeah, and I love your question because it brings a lot of it together because we have a lot of components to our program. And the first one is educating. And in order to prevent this kind of abuse, we educate veterinarians and the community on this link, and which is what Keystone Links does. It's so important because animal abuse is one of the top four predictors that there's going to be person abuse. And why is this happening? It's not about the abuse exactly. It's about a way of power and control. So that's what domestic violence is. It's about power and control over another person, making them do what you want and having power. And people use that in different ways, that power. Some people use it through abuse and some people use it through control. But when you love a pet or a pet is a part of your family, as most families in the United States say that their pet, they consider their pet as part of their family, then that person uses that pet to intimidate and control other people around them. And so they will say, hey, I'm going to hurt your pet, like I'm going to hurt you. Or if you don't listen to me, I'm not going to take your pet to the vet. I'm going to withhold all the financial means. They're going to yell at the pet to show their power and control over the situation. So that's why they use that. They use that pet to keep that control over the family. So we do a lot of different kind of education to veterinarians to so that we can identify, if they can identify that an animal is being abused in the home, just like the pecking order that Teresa said, then it is most likely that they are going, there is already human abuse in that family, or there's going to be human abuse in that family. You know, even all, we have women that are entering shelters report that pet abuse used those perpetrators to manipulate and control their victims. You know, they found that 71 to 83% of women that are entering into DV shelters report that their partners had abused or killed the family pet. In the court system, I have seen it. I have heard it from people. You know, there's a crisis going on in the family, and that crisis allows people to become more in control or actually connected to their pet a lot of the times. So when you see crises like natural disasters, you know, I'm from Pittsburgh. We have floods over here. We had a flood in Millvale. People, when the boats came to pick up the people from their homes, they said, I am not leaving my home unless my pet can come with me. So we work not only on educating the people about how do we identify this to get them services, but also to help them, because that pet ownership can sometimes be a barrier to leaving. The abuser will say, if you leave, I'm getting the pet, or they don't want to leave their pet in an abusive situation. And they have that intensified emotional bond with that pet during the crisis. So we have a program that second part of our program is that we will help them leave. We will help them get, you know, if it's an emergency situation, a pet friendly hotel. We have different kinds of housing programs with pets. We help them financial with their pets ways so that, because they will not, they won't leave their pet if they believe that that pet is going to be harmed, abused, or killed. So that's really important on having them have services to help them take their pet with them or put their pet in a safe place so that they don't have that guilt of leaving that pet or not leaving at all. And then the third part of our component is what you talked about in the beginning, which is something that I love because I'm in court, is we have these wonderful therapy dogs, emotional support dogs that come to court with us. So the pencil in a happy view on it, Supreme Court has ruled in Pennsylvania that the dogs are allowed to sit with victims when they're testifying, you know, with certain directions to the jury. But they are amazing. And they come, you figure, we go to criminal court and you figure you have a person who has to come into a court setting, which is institutional, extremely intimidating. They are scared before, during, and after. But they have a pet there that comes with them. So they are able, they have to go in and testify about some of the most personal things that ever happened to them. And that defendant is sitting in there who is a person that they loved. So the person that you loved so much who has hurt you, and you have to sit in a courtroom and tell personal details of things that have happened to you. And this animal, so interestingly and so amazingly, makes it 100% better. As soon as we have a dog named Ari, who I work with, and he walks right into the courtroom with me, I'll tell you what, everyone's smiling. Oh, look, it's a dog. And he's real furry. He's beautiful. I wish we were on screen so I could show you pictures of him.
What breed is he? I started smiling right away.
Yeah, he's a shelter dog, which is another amazing thing. But he is part, we think he's part Australian Shepherd and Lab. So he's really fluffy. I said, yeah. If he interviewed for the job, he would have gone it.
Dana Herman Hart, real quick, I wanted to follow up on what you were just talking about. The role of veterinarians. Are veterinarians trained to look for animal abuse? And I don't know, there's mandated reporters for humans. What about for animals?
And that's a great issue that the Keystone Links was just bringing up. They are, let's say, trained to find abuse, but it needs more because, interestingly, we will have evaluations and they will say, can you give us some more examples on how we can determine if there's animal abuse? And those things, unfortunately, to discuss about are things like, you know, they said they got hit with a car, but they don't have any abrasions. They have bruising only to the side of them, a lot of things like that. And what the form, what their job will be is to say, you know, it's hard because they're not in that profession of people. How do we get them to us from them? So they will have like little tent cards that they'll put in their bathrooms. They will have brochures out, or even say, you know, if it, this is a, you know, interesting injury, if there's anything else in your family that you need to talk about, call me outside of the office. Never want to talk about it if an abuser could possibly be in the room with them. And then they do, if they do report animal abuse, there is immunity towards them of being prosecuted with it. There is no law that requires them to report animal abuse like we do with the children.
So no mandated reporters.
No mandated reporting.
Teresa Olson, when there is suspected child abuse and an investigator from the county comes out, do they actually look at the animals, or is that even part of their investigation?
And I will preface this by saying that I, prior to joining the Academy of Pediatrics, I spent 15 years in Child Protective Services doing the investigations. And I can tell you that there is concern, but there is not a mandate for cross-reporting. And with more education, I think caseworkers will take a closer look. We did the Keystone Link Coalition did a webinar a couple of years ago specifically for children and youth workers across the Commonwealth. And the feedback that we got was fabulous because they were like, thank you so much for this training. Because, yeah, now that I think about it, I have been in situations where I was doing a child abuse investigation and I did notice that, you know, that there was a dog being held out and back with, you know, in the cold and didn't seem to have, you know, any water in the dish. And there are concerns. And again, I've heard that from the EMS community as well. When we are out in the home doing our mandatory home visit, we're able to see sometimes that not only what's going on with the kids, but what's going on with the pets. There is not that required cross-reporting. But just having more education for children and youth investigators is critically important.
Kristen Tullo, yeah. You know, I think back a few years ago, was it 9 years now with Libre's Law?
2017.
Okay,
it's
so
been a while.
So
yeah.
It, 7 years. It has been a while. I'm pointing to for everyone that can't see me. I'm pointing behind us our studio window. His nose. Libre was in our studio, and he left a nose print on a window years ago. It took years, and I made sure that no one cleaned it.
PA's main man. Sloppy kisses on the window.
So we have about 2 minutes
yeah.
left.
Okay. Yep.
That law
yep.
and other law yep. since.
Yeah.
What does it say,
yeah.
and is yeah. there a crossover between animal cruelty laws mm-hmm. and violence toward humans?
Yeah, and as someone who co-founded the Keystone Link Coalition alongside Kathleen Palm, that was with the Center for Children's Justice, that was in response to Michael Fetterman's case in Western Pennsylvania. He was a 2-year-old who there he was murdered by, and prior to that, there was a puppy being abused that had to have their leg amputated, and the abuse prior to the dog before Michael's sexual assault and murder have led many to ask the question, what might have happened if authorities were called out for the abuse of the puppy? So while there's no restoring Michael's you know, childhood or life, we can honor him by making what we've just heard about mandated reporters for Humane Society police officers and animal control officers are another category we've been advocating for to ensure that professionals that are investigating the abuse or neglect of, you know, humans or animals are, you know, making sure that they're able to report that abuse the maltreatment of an animal. And this can allow us to really inform those preventative strategies around data. So what we were talking about with Libre's law, we know that after that law was signed into effect in 2017, more than 25,000 animal cruelty offenses were filed that year. And most of them were for neglect of an animal. What isn't known is how many individuals who abused an animal also hurt a partner or child. So as we're moving forward, we're going to continue advocating for legislation.
The two aren't separate, obviously. I mean, that's one of the things that I think we've learned today, that if there is violence in the home, neglect in the home, it may not just be in the humans, it may not just be with the pets as well. I want to thank the three of you for being with us today. Kristen Tullo with the Humane Society of the United States, Teresa Olson with Suspected Child Abuse and Neglect, Pennsylvania Chapter, American Academy of Pediatrics, and Dana Herman Hart, Director of Legal Services and Pauls for Empowerment for Crisis Center North. Thank the three of you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.